19 Hours 30 UTC on Wednesday, December 13th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
There's also the question of the indeterminate number of people who are arbitrarily detained without effective judicial oversight.
That was Arnold Tsunga, the Africa Director for the International Commission of Jurists, speaking in Harare. We'll have more on that story as well as a follow-up to yesterday's U.S. Senate hearing on Zimbabwe coming up. Good evening, I'm Chidon Jere, and I'm Kudzanai Mutetla on VOA Zimbabwe Today. Today we're going to revisit the U.S. Senate hearing on Zimbabwe. United States lawmakers and top Department of State official yesterday urged Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa to address atrocities of the 1980s committed by the country's Northern Korean-trained 5th Brigade, which left more than 20,000 supporters of then-opposition ZAPU Party, led by Joshua Nkomo, dead and thousands maimed and displaced. VOA's Gibbs Dube has more.
Republican Senator Jake Fleck, Senator Cory Booker of the Democratic Party, and Stephanie Sullivan, Principal Deputy Assistant Director of the Bureau of African Affairs in the U.S. Department of State, made the remarks during and after a congressional hearing on Zimbabwe conducted by the Congressional Committee on Foreign Relations. Booker said President Mnangagwa should address the 5th Brigade atrocities to ensure peace prevails in Zimbabwe.
The new government of Zimbabwe and the international community must address the yet unanswered calls for justice and accountability for the victims of past horrific atrocities reportedly committed by members of the now new government, perpetrators of the brutal cleansing of political opposition in Matabeleland region in the 1980s, in which 20,000 people were killed.
Flake echoed Booker's sentiments, noting that Mnangagwa is believed to be associated with the killings. Prime Minister Robert Mugabe in the 1980s deployed the 5th Brigade in Matabeleland and Midlands provinces, which were Nkomo strongholds, claiming that his government was fighting against dissidents that were killing innocent civilians. At least 20,000 people were killed in the atrocities. According to Sullivan, that's the main reason USA officials are handling the Zimbabwean crisis with an open mind.
We're engaging with the new government with an open mind. It's not enough to say it's a new government, so therefore none of the sanctions or restrictions that were previously in place should apply. We will continue to look for signs of actual implementation.
Some members of the Congressional Panel on the Future of Zimbabwe, including human rights activist Dewa Mavinga and Tendai Biti, president of the People's Democratic Party, also urged Mnangagwa's government to allow people in the diaspora to vote in the next elections. Biti said Zimbabwe's constitution allows the country's citizens living in various nations to take part in national elections.
The diaspora is right to vote. So we are insisting that we can disenfranchise the millions of Zimbabweans that are in the diaspora. In the past, there's been a serious resistance by the authorities against the enfranchising people in the diaspora. The major argument and the major unstated premise has been that people in the diaspora are deemed to be opposition, but that's neither here nor there. We have to empower and enfranchise the Zimbabweans abroad.
Speaking about revamping Zimbabwe, author and journalist Peter Godwin told the meeting that there is need for developed nations to entice Mnangagwa to implement tangible reforms through setting up a fund for the Southern African nation.
We bring together a huge pot of money. You basically put all the things that you would, and it's not necessarily new money, but you bring the international community together, all the donors, all the bilateral aid, etc., etc., and you hold this thing out and you coordinate it and you say, if you do these certain things, if you meet these certain benchmarks, whatever, we will unlock this thing. And they look at this glittering pile of goodies and they think, my God, everybody gets excited about it, whatever. And you turn it around. At the same time, that's the carrot. You have a stick where you say, and if you don't, then we're going to ratchet things up. And
various people who spoke at the congressional hearing on Zimbabwe said there is little hope that Mnangagwa will transform the country into a democratic state, as he is associated with former President Robert Mugabe, who devastated Zimbabwe following 37 years of Iron Fist rule. Reporting for Zimbabwe Today, this is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C.
You're Dr. Frank Guni is a ZANU-PF member who attended yesterday's hearing. Like many Zimbabweans, he is angry that the Senate subcommittee did not invite the government or ZANU-PF members to take part in the discussion. He spoke with me today about the hearing.
Well, in my view, it was not productive in the sense that we still have Zimbabweans who think that coming to Washington, D.C. and calling for sanctions is a solution for Zimbabwe. It was very unfortunate that we had people who flew all the way from Harare to come and encourage the United States Congress to keep sanctions on Zimbabwe, the very sanctions that are affecting the common men and women in Zimbabwe.
And what are your thoughts on the fact that there was nobody from the ruling party represented among the witnesses?
It's absolutely unacceptable and quite preposterous that the United States Congress can hold a hearing purporting to be discussing the future of Zimbabwe using one political side and not the government of Zimbabwe representatives who were invited. Not a single ZANU-PF representative was invited. I made it clear to the chairman of the committee, Chairman Fletcher, I am a non-ZANU-PF representative, but they didn't even extend an invitation to us, and that's unacceptable.
Do you think the hearing was conducive to getting any conversation started in terms of getting in and trying to engage the ruling party in conversation, or do you think it's been a detriment to that?
Well, I think it was very unfortunate for them to have done that. What they should have done is to engage the government of Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. If, however, there was going to be impediments by the government of Zimbabwe, then they would have had a just concern for saying, well, we have tried to engage the government and they haven't been able to sit down with us. But in this case, that's not the case. They jumped all the way to Washington, D.C. without even bothering to try and talk to the government of Zimbabwe or engage the people of Zimbabwe in the first place. And I think that's counterproductive.
I also spoke with Roderick Machicano, who is a biostatistician for the Elizabeth Glasser Pediatric AIDS Foundation here in the United States. He is also a member of the Zimbabwe Diaspora Network for North America. He attended the hearing and shared his thoughts with me.
So I was a little bit taken aback by the human rights guy, because asking for sanctions to be kept on, we really have to look at what the impact of sanctions has been. These sanctions, the Zidera thing has been on for what? Close to a decade now, right? And what has it been able to do? We see that the targeted people have not suffered at all. In actual fact, most of them have become so much richer than before, the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who suffer are the ordinary people. So when the human rights guy was talking about maintaining sanctions, I was disappointed.
And what do you think about the fact that there were no government representatives at the hearing?
Right, that's actually a very good point to note. And I was a little bit impressed towards the end by what Mr. Beatty actually said. He said to the senators to actually engage the government, the people in power, in order to discuss these sort of changes that are required to facilitate free and fair elections and all the demands that were sort of presented. And I think the Senate should engage the government. They should visit Zimbabwe. And, I mean, apparently some of the senators, like Senator Coons, and I think even Senator Fleck may have visited Zimbabwe at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And they should do that. Go and engage with the government people, with the government people in charge, and see how, which way we can be, take this forward. In particular, I think the idea of a carrot and stick to say, look, if you do these changes, then we are going to help you in this way. I think that's going to help.
There's been quite a bit of reaction on social media saying that the fact that the opposition came to speak to Senate was kind of jumping the gun and going backwards in terms of not engaging the ruling party and not trying to fix the problems within the country and trying to have the international community come in and fix the problems for them. What do you think about that reaction?
Well, I think that that's also a justified position criticism of the opposition. not knowing exactly what, whether the MDC alliance sort of asked to meet the senators or they were invited.
Mm-hmm.
Also not being privy of what's going on within the country in terms of discussions.
Mm-hmm.
We have heard stories, you know, but then there's a lot of fake news these days that President Mnangagwa approached some opposition figures to consider them into the new government.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have any truth to that. But I think internal discussions should be ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And people trying to resolve our own problems before we really engage outsiders.
That was Dr. Roderick Machekano discussing yesterday's hearing in the U.S. Senate with me. Social media today buzzed with a reaction to yesterday's U.S. Senate hearing. There were a range of opinions about who was speaking up for Zimbabwean citizens and how Zimbabweans can move forward without falling back into old habits. On the VOA Studio 7 Facebook page, at least 100 comments went back and forth among audience members. The issue of sanctions was a big topic. Some posts were against lifting sanctions, but others said sanctions should not be used as a threat. Still, other posts encouraged Zimbabweans to focus on turning things around. Also, stop relying on the international community to always be there to bail them out.
Philip says, disappointing. I was hoping they would meet Mnangagwa first and voice their concerns rather than running off to foreign capitals.
Maureen Guaranda says, good move, MDC Alliance, for engaging USA. The Chinese that Zanu-PF is engaging are not good.
John Nyasha says, why did they not invite the Mnangagwa administration? Why is MDC causing problems to our nation?
Jembu Mashana says, why are you worried about Miti and Chamisa? Just be worried about the criminals in your ZANU people, like Orbit Mpofu and Chinamasa. Ask them where the $15 billion, because you rushed to accuse MDC ministers, and no one can lift those sanctions before you fix your problem in your ZANU.
Zimbabweans are busy seeking for solutions to solve our economic problems, and MDC is working flat out to invite more poverty and sanctions.
Kudakwashe Chibindi says, we need to take our country to the next level, and some who are power hunters / hungry are inviting more sanctions to make an ordinary citizen suffer, which is a treasonous habit of the MDC Alliance to throw the spinners.
The International Commission of Jurists is calling for Zimbabwe's new government to ensure free and fair elections next year. As Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare, it is not the only rights group that is making that appeal.
Following a week-long visit to Zimbabwe, the International Commission of Jurists, led by its Secretary General Saman Zia Zarif, said soldiers who held President Emmerson Mnangagwa come to power last month must return to their barracks. The army has been policing Harare and other cities and has set up checkpoints along major roads. In an interview Wednesday with VOA, ICJ Director in Africa, Arnold Tsunga, said civic and opposition groups are worried the situation will compromise Zimbabwe's next elections, which are expected around the middle of next year.
That has been of concern because at a time when the Secretary General was here, there were a number of pictures coming out on social media as well as videos showing that the military readily resorted to the use of violence in order to drive their point home. There's also the question of the indeterminate number of people who were arbitrarily detained without effective judicial oversight. So the question of undermining due process rights, which is essentially the right to fair trial as a result of the involvement of the army in policing duties. That also was brought to the attention of the ICJ Secretary General, and he in fact made, as part of his exit press statement, a call that you don't need the army to be involved in policing duties.
Ibo Mandaza is the head of Southern African political economy series, a regional NGO. He says the Zimbabwe government's over-reliance on the army confirmed it had gained power through a coup.
It's a coup. I said from the very beginning, didn't I? Mm. I've never changed my position.
I find it very odd that anyone can celebrate a coup. It has behaved in unconstitutional, clearly. This is not how an army should begin. So it has become a fifth estate. You have a situation now where the military is above the executive, mm-hmm. above parliament. That's what a coup means. Hmm? So why should it be acceptable here? It's unacceptable.
What's going to happen now? That the military won't leave the streets until after elections.
That could lead to another disputed poll for Zimbabwe. Former President Robert Mugabe was accused of rigging elections for years, most notably the 2008 election where he lost in the first round. On Tuesday, Zimbabwean opposition and civic leaders were in Washington and appealed to Congress for help in ensuring the 2018 elections are free and fair. The new government has asked for help in rebuilding Zimbabwe's moribund economy. The international community has said that will only happen if next year's elections are credible. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa in Washington. At 46 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change. The African Export-Import Bank is promising loans and financial support of up to $1.5 billion to Zimbabwe. The bank also will provide guarantees to investors in the country. Bank Director Oki Orama met with President Emmerson Mnangagwa yesterday before announcing the loan. He said it is intended to help stabilize the economy as the Mnangagwa government focuses on reforms aimed at boosting growth. In addition, the XM Bank will offer $150 million in support for banks that struggle with financing imports and with a cash shortage. Zimbabwe, like many countries, just finished the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. During those 16 days, civic organizations and other stakeholders raised awareness about the issue. Reporter Kudzai Junawashe talks with activists on what the movement means for Zimbabweans.
Nyaradzo Mashayamombe is a feminist and the founding director of Take a Life International Trust, a non-profit that pushes for women's rights and empowerment. She is a victim of gender-based violence.
As a leader who has also experienced physical violence, largely because of the work that I do, the end of 16 days of activism simply means that we need to scale up from 16 days of activism to 365 days of activism where we raise awareness with our loved ones.
While the issues of gender-based violence is quite broad, Mashayamombe says most victims are women.
You find that most times women and girls are more vulnerable to gender-based violence in whatever structure you are in because of the patriarchy that whether a man is rich or poor, they still feel that entitlement to dominate over women.
Zaza Muchemwa is a playwright, poet, and theater director, as well as an activist.
16 Days of Activism is a platform that is fighting against violence against mostly women, especially here in Zimbabwe. The statistics show that it's mostly women who suffer domestic violence, whether it's in a marital relationship or romantic relationship or any other kind of violence they face.
Mashayamombe says the justice system doesn't help much with gender-based violence.
The justice system isn't helping so much because there's too much corruption. There is underfunding of the justice system. You call the police for a child who's been abused, they tell you you don't have a vehicle. So that means organizations like TALI has to look for funding to be able to help those children.
She adds, civic organizations can only do so much to help, but they are working on a shoestring budget and some are even closing due to donor fatigue. Mashayamombe says the underfunding also hampers the Ministry of Women as well as social service programs. What's more, activists say Gender-based violence also goes unreported because the perpetrators are the breadwinners, which means victims face a tough choice, livelihood or justice. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Uganda's ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, has proposed scrapping the age limit for presidential candidates and extending the length of a presidential term. The proposal has the backing of President Yoweri Museveni, who has ruled Uganda for over 30 years. Halima Adumani has more on the story from VOA from Kampala.
The proposed amendment to Uganda's constitution seeks to scrap the 75-year age limit for presidential candidates and extend the length of presidential terms from 5 to 7 years. The move would benefit long-time President Yoweri Museveni, for whom the parliament scrapped term limits in 2005. The Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee approved the constitutional change in a closed-door meeting last week, and the proposal will soon be presented to parliament. President Museveni voiced support for the proposal in a meeting with legislators.
2 terms of 5 years is simply a joke. When you hear somebody talking about it, you know that he just wants to improve his CV so that they say he was president. But to think that he wants to solve the problems of the people is totally out. So there is merit in looking at the 7 years.
But members of the opposition say the ruling National Resistance Movement should let Ugandans vote on the changes through a referendum. Winnie Kiza is the leader of the opposition in parliament.
Whatever Museveni has not done in 30 years, and by the time he finishes this term, it will be 35 years, he can't do it. We came here to serve a 5-year mandate. We can't reach midway, and then we say, look here, we want to change our mandate from 5, and if it is to happen, let Ugandans discuss it and see whether this is the trend they want to go.
There are reports that the bill is being delayed because legislators have demanded $83,000 each before they vote yes. Rafael Majezi, the NRM legislator behind the bill, denied the allegations.
That's untrue. I've not seen even a single shilling, and I don't expect it. Me, I'm prepared. I want this report. We debate it. I get the second reading. Then my bill is passed. We should not go for Christmas with this bill still hanging.
The ruling party requires a yes vote from 2/3 of voting members, 290 in all, for the constitutional amendment to pass. If passed, President Museveni will be allowed to run in the 2021 elections when he will be 77 years old and could rule Uganda for many years to come. Halima Asmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The U.S. Embassy in Addis Ababa Wednesday said it is troubled and saddened by news reports of violence in Ethiopia. Over the past few days, there have been reports of several protesters dying in violence in the town of Chinalenko and at some universities. It is not clear what sparked the protest. There also are reports that the Ethiopian government has responded to protests by cutting access to social media and some internet sites. The U.S. Embassy said it encourages Ethiopians to uphold the tradition of respect for the country's ethnic diversity and peaceful coexistence. French President Emmanuel Macron gathered business leaders and 50 world leaders in Paris for a summit today. The focus of the meeting was on boosting funding to fight climate change. The summit comes 2 years after nearly 200 nations agreed to the Paris Climate Accord. It calls for nations to limit greenhouse gas emissions and for rich countries to help developing countries deal with the impacts of climate change. U.S. President Donald Trump was not among those invited to take part in the conference. Trump announced the U.S. was pulling out of the accord, saying it disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries. Reporter Catherine Field is in Paris covering the summit. She spoke with our colleague Kim Lewis about the important role developing countries play in mitigating climate change.
This particular summit is called the One Planet Summit. It's really to give, if you like, a bit of a push to the Paris Climate Change Agreement, which was signed here in Paris 2 years ago. The French President Emmanuel Macron has, if you like, he's tried to establish himself as the man who can push the rest of the world into agreeing to really get on top of climate change. Just within the last 24 hours, the French president said that the real impetus for this was when the American president decided to walk away from that Paris Agreement. Emmanuel Macron said that this really created, if you like, a huge momentum to create a counter-momentum, to really get on top of everything that needs to be done to get climate change under control. And in that respect, he wants to get all these leaders together, particularly also your local mayors who've also come here, your local businesses, to get them to come together and particularly to talk about the financial issues. That means raising money to give to developing countries to help them with their clean energy, to, if you like, also keep an eye on some of the development banks and make sure that they're not lending money to countries so as they can open new coal plants. And it's matters like that, particularly the financing, that Emmanuel Macron says is so important now, because as he put it, true, he doesn't want people to come to him in 20 to 30 years' time and to say, you did nothing. He feels that now is the time to do something.
Well, one big example is the Burkina Faso example. Can you tell us about this and what is going on there regarding climate change?
The one particular resource that Burkina Faso has, like most of the Sahel region, is sunshine. And just in late November, Emmanuel Macron was in Burkina Faso, and he was there for this particular solar power plant on the outskirts of the capital, Ouagadougou, when it came on stream. This is a huge solar power plant, 55 hectares. And what it will do in particular is it will cut energy dependence and it will boost renewables. So one of the things that the French Development Agency did was it funded half of this particular project. It funded $25 million of this. The remainder of it, this financing, came from the European Union. So what Emmanuel Macron is going to say to the delegates today is he's going to say, look, you know, this is something concrete. When this is really at maximum capacity, it will mean that Burkina Faso has a lot of its energy needs coming from solar. The whole object of this is that by 2030, Burkina Faso will have 30% of its energy needs coming from solar. It will also mean that this particular country, it doesn't have the energy dependence. At the moment, Burkina Faso gets a lot of its energy from Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. So this big project, which France helped finance, that was really there, is what he's going to hold up as saying, you can't just tell these countries to do more. You have to help them with the new technology. And in that way, France, and of course also China, is absolutely there at the forefront, helping, not just handing over the money, but saying, okay, here's how we can work together. And I think that is really the next move that Emmanuel Macron is going to be holding up and saying, okay, let's look at these countries that are developing. Let's look at the resources they have there. And let's work with them to use those resources.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis from Paris. That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Debele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Debele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We leave you now with a song by Knox.
Come here, man. Dino Fira, Kuneva, 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 and the Buddha music can get forever. They could do what he might do. They want Sasso man in any no batter, Mondo baby. Kunga to Kundoko Tengera, Pata Pata, Nekuta, Wissi Chidori, Yakadaro MMT. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do it.